We are prepared to continue to work on diplomacy, but we are also prepared to respond in a united and decisive way with our allies and partners.
Urging some people to leave Ukraine. It's Tuesday, February 15th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a visit to the front line. Trading organs for money. The COVID fight continues. Hot Olympic souvenirs. A musical painting experience. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The White House ordered U.S. military trainers out of Ukraine in the same week it reduced embassy personnel there to bare bones. With at least 100,000 Russian troops encircling Ukraine, Washington says an invasion could be any day now. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has the story.
Russian and Belarusian forces take part in joint military drills in Belarus. Ukraine's neighbor to the north is now one of the staging grounds for at least 100,000 Russian troops amassed along the border with Ukraine. Russia maintains it has no intention of invading Ukraine, but top U.S. officials warn otherwise.
The way they have built up their forces, the way they have maneuvered things in place, makes it a distinct possibility that there will be major military action very soon. And we are prepared to continue to work on diplomacy, but we are also prepared to respond in a united and decisive way with our allies and partners should Russia proceed.
U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin Saturday spoke by phone, and the White House tweeted Biden's warning of swift and severe cost if Russia invades its neighbor. The phone call reportedly did little to ease tensions. U.S. lawmakers have voiced concern about the situation.
This is not the last president America will have. If Russia invades the Ukraine, you will destroy the U.S.-Russian relationship for decades, and every president in the near term will be put in a box when it comes to dealing with Russia. So I hope Putin understands that.
While the Kremlin says it has no plans to invade Ukraine, the Russian Defense Ministry released this video and said more than 30 ships from its Black Sea fleet recently set sail to practice naval maneuvers. Just a short trip north to the Sea of Azov, there's a small contingent of East Ukrainian border guards in small ships. They are no match for the Russian Navy. Ukraine lost much of its navy when Russia illegally annexed Crimea in 2014. The United States pulled most embassy personnel from Kyiv and issued warnings to Americans to get out of Ukraine. The White House also pulled the troops who've been training Ukrainian forces, reportedly reassigning them within Europe, where, according to the Department of Defense, they'll soon be joined by another 3,000 troops from the 82nd Airborne Division. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
Follow more with us by going online. Check us out on Twitter at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Find us as well on voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Hong Kong leader says city overwhelmed by Omicron wave. Cambodia steps up surveillance with new internet gateway. United States, Japan, and South Korea meet in Hawaii to discuss North Korea and Ukraine. India set to transport relief aid to Afghanistan via Pakistan. Japan's Kirin Brewery to withdraw from Myanmar. You'll find much more on these stories with expanded coverage on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia as the tense situation along the Ukrainian border continues to intensify. Tensions over threat of a Russian invasion are rising, although in the eastern city of Avdiivka, along the front lines facing Kremlin-backed separatists, the war has never ceased since 2014. For VOA, Ricardo Marquina traveled there and has this report narrated by Elizabeth Cherniff.
Ukrainian soldiers lead us through the maze of trenches. Here, the Ukrainian troops have become stronger after years of battle against the separatists, supported and armed by Moscow. Barely 50 meters away, the enemy is also watching us. As the soldiers who serve here see it, The war is against Russia, and the very survival of Ukraine is at stake.
There has been talk of a possible invasion for a long time. We are in our land. We do not intend to leave it.
Despite the almost daily exchange of fire on this line of contact, Ukrainian forces consider the situation under control.
The situation is stable. It is under control. If the enemy begins an escalation of the conflict, we will be ready for any change in the scenario.
This position is in the town of Avdiivka, which endured heavy fighting during the early days of the war 8 years ago. Now the population lives in fear of an escalation. This is the city's military supply store, which opened before the war. We spoke with the owner, Natalia, who, like all the residents, asked to withhold her surname. She confesses that she fears a new, full-fledged conflict.
People are nervous, worried, especially because we're in this area. I would not want a new war.
For residents of this town, which still bears the scars of war, the attitudes and emotions these last few weeks have swung between fear and acceptance.
We are worried. My parents live here. It's scary.
If Putin had wanted to attack, he would have already done so.
On the now quiet front line, the men and women of the Ukrainian army wait and watch. From the other side, the war could return at any moment. For Ricardo Marquina in Avdiivka, Ukraine, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
All eyes are on Russian President Vladimir Putin. Experts say Putin may have placed himself in a difficult position in an effort to elevate Russia's standing in the world. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain has more.
Russian President Vladimir Putin blaming the U.S. and NATO for the mounting tensions.
Their most important goal is to contain Russia. That's the thing. In this sense, Ukraine itself is just a tool to achieve this goal. This can be done in different ways. One of them is to draw us into some armed conflict.
But experts note Putin is the one who deployed more than 100,000 Russian troops to Ukraine's border, Crimea, and Belarus to bolster his demand that NATO pull some of its forces out of Eastern Europe and promise to never admit Ukraine. With this military buildup, Putin has put himself into a box, says former CIA military analyst Jeffrey Edmonds.
He's made very maximalist demands that he knows that we can't. I would assume that he knows we can't meet. We're not going to withdraw NATO infrastructure back to 1997 levels, which is one of the things that they've asked us to do. And so I think he's in a holding pattern, waiting for the right military composition on Ukraine's border in order to actually take military action.
President Joe Biden says he and Putin understand each other, but Biden has also said he believes Putin is planning to invade Ukraine. Some experts say Putin wants to make sure Russia is still viewed as a major player on the world stage. Angela Stent wrote the book Putin's World.
And he believes that the rest of the world should treat Russia as if it were the Soviet Union. He doesn't want to restore the Soviet Union, but he wants to be treated as a great power whose views are respected and where people sort of fear Russia and they accept that Russia has a right to this sphere of influence in its neighborhood.
Some experts say Putin likely sees eastern Ukraine, where a war has been simmering since he annexed Crimea in 2014, as part of Russia.
So I think Putin might acknowledge that western Ukraine is genuinely Ukrainian and perhaps belongs in the European cultural and political world. But in his eyes, eastern Ukraine is sort of a version or an extension of Russia.
But what Putin really fears the most is dissent from his own people, says Bill Browder, founder of the Magnitsky Justice Campaign.
The average Russian is worse off, a lot worse off than when he first became president. And that's all, he owns that. That's all on him. And so he's pulling this strategy straight out of the dictator's playbook that when people are mad at you, make them mad at somebody else, start a war.
During his New Year address to the nation, Putin did not mention that he implemented a major crackdown on his critics. The most influential one, Alexei Navalny, was jailed 1 year ago after he survived a poisoning attack. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
Happening now in Asia, a team from the International Atomic Energy Agency has begun their review in Japan of its plan to release treated radioactive water into the sea from the wrecked Fukushima nuclear plant, a mission Japan hopes will install confidence that its plan is safe. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. You're here. We're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. Aid organizations are warning of a humanitarian disaster brewing in Afghanistan. Millions of people need immediate food aid. Abject poverty and a lack of work has led people to go to extreme measures. VOA's Aisha Tanzim went to a neighborhood in Herat province where selling one's kidney seemed to be a common practice.
Fariba can now only perform light work around the house. Her health is not the same since she sold her kidney around 2 years ago. For her already poor family, the last 6 months have brought extra pain.
My husband is jobless for 4 or 5 months. We are 7 people and we have a new baby in our family. We can't feed her. We have nothing to eat. We don't have anything to burn for heat. My children are sick.
Before the Taliban took over Afghanistan, her husband worked as a daily laborer, earning less than $3 a day. Since then, there is hardly any work and no income. She received around $2,000 for her kidney, but the money went toward debt the family had accumulated. In her neighborhood, this seems to be the norm. All these men and many of the women who did not want to appear on camera have sold their kidneys. One man told VOA each of his 5 brothers had done so. In a camp a few kilometers away, Allah Nazar was also forced to sell his kidney 3 months ago. So did all the other men who appear in this video.
After the change in government, everything became so expensive. We wanted to leave the country, but we couldn't, so I had to sell my kidney.
He used to have a farm and animals, but everything was destroyed during the war. He's one of 9 million Afghans who are displaced from their homes.
Even before the Taliban took over Afghanistan, it was a poor country that was heavily dependent on foreign aid. The loss of all that aid, coupled with the uncertainty that has led to the loss of work and jobs and businesses, has made the situation in the last 6 months significantly worse.
Half of Afghanistan's population faces acute hunger, according to the United Nations. People are forced to take desperate measures. Zainullah sold his kidney around a month and a half ago.
I borrowed from people because I needed money to feed my family. But even my brother stopped giving me money because everyone has their own needs. My family needs food, and one packet of wheat is now $20. I couldn't feed my family, so I sacrificed my body because my children were hungry.
Back in Fariba's house, things seem more dire by the day. The family has been eating plain rice for dinner and breakfast. With no help in sight, she's now thinking of selling the youngest of her 3 daughters. Aisha Tanzim, VOA News, Herat, Afghanistan.
See more on this story by visiting us at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. LGBTQ activists in Taiwan braved a Valentine's Day downpour to protest against the island's same-sex marriage law, which allows Taiwanese to wed foreigners of the same sex, but only from countries that also recognize marriage equality. Find more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. The World Health Organization is recommending 2 new drugs for the treatment of COVID-19. adding to a growing list of therapeutic remedies for the deadly disease. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Baricitinib is an oral medication recommended for patients with severe or critical COVID-19. It is part of a class of drugs that suppress the overstimulation of the immune system and is used in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. WHO team leader for clinical care, Janet Diaz, says the drug should be given along with corticosteroids, a type of anti-inflammatory treatment. She notes three clinical trials of 2,600 people showed a drop in the mortality of patients with coronavirus infections once they received baricitinib. She says WHO has also conditionally recommended the use of a monoclonal antibody drug called sotrovimab for treating patients with COVID-19 who have mild or moderate disease.
Conditional to those patients that are at the highest risk for complications. So this would include patients who are of older age, unvaccinated, or have a chronic condition. This recommendation is based on one trial, a well-done trial, with over 1,000 patients, just over 1,000 patients. And this trial showed a reduction in the need for hospitalization.
Studies are ongoing on the effectiveness of monoclonal antibodies against the Omicron variant. Diaz says early laboratory studies show that sotrovimab continues to be effective against the new coronavirus strain. However, she says she would not call the drug a game changer.
I think we have multiple therapeutic options right now for COVID-19, and more are in the way. Unfortunately, you know, viruses are known to develop resistance to certain drugs, and that is not so SARS-CoV-2 is not different in that respect. And if something happens where the resistance does develop, we try to hopefully reduce the chance that that happens.
The WHO official says other therapeutics are in the pipeline. She says WHO is committed to equitable and affordable access for all member states to COVID-19 drugs. She says the agency and partners are meeting with pharmaceutical companies to negotiate fair prices and access for low- and middle-income countries to life-saving treatments. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, two companies in Bangkok, Thailand have teamed up to make Buddhist amulets by using 9 types of recyclable materials like plastic bottles and nylon fishing nets, an important step in a country estimated to be the 5th biggest contributor of plastic to the world's oceans. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, at the Beijing Olympics heading into competition today, Norway leads the medals table with 9 gold medals, 5 silver, and 7 bronze for a games-leading 21 overall medals. Germany follows with 8 gold, 5 silver, and 2 bronze. The United States is in third place with 7 gold, 6 silver, and 3 bronze. Host China sits at number 7, having collected 5 gold, 3 silver, and 2 bronze. The Court of Arbitration for Sport has ruled to allow 15-year-old Russian skater Kamila Valieva to compete despite a positive drug test in December. The ruling has caused an uproar among most of the other competing nations. Americans Callie Humphreys and Elena Myers-Taylor took gold and silver respectively in women's monobob, which made its Olympic debut at the Beijing Winter Games. You can follow all the latest Olympic news with us at voanews.com. Meanwhile, Chinese Olympic mascots and a special orange harvest are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascajo.
With the Beijing Winter Olympics underway, customers have been racing to stores to snap up scarce souvenirs, including the particularly popular stuffed versions of Games mascot Bing Duan Duan, a panda in a winter coat. People showed up with stools Sunday to wait overnight in freezing temperatures outside Gongmei Emporium on the Wangfujing Pedestrian Mall in central Beijing. Some were from a mini-industry of people who are paid to stand in line to buy the latest smartphones and other consumer crazes for clients. The pandas were sold out Monday at many locations, including at the Olympics facilities, where Chinese volunteers and foreign visitors lined up for hours. Miss Dong is a customer waiting in line.
I will wait until then to see what I can get. I don't have much expectation.
A sign in Gongmei's window said it had 300 Bing Duan Duan figures, and buyers were allowed one each. The official Xinhua news agency said the Beijing Olympic Organizing Committee has asked souvenir factories to make more. Many reopened this week after shutting down for 2 weeks or more during the Lunar New Year holiday. Employees with bullhorns urged them not to stay overnight when temperatures were forecast to fall to -6 degrees Celsius. The official newspaper Global Times reported that Gongmei's Wangfujing flagship sold Olympics merchandise worth 3 million yuan, which was $470,000 on Friday, the day of the opening ceremony. For many exporters of the fruit kino, mandarin harvest season begins in Pakistan in December and runs for a few months. Pakistan's sweet oranges make up a whopping majority of all citrus fruit production in the country. Much of the harvest ends up being exported, then consumed abroad. Adnan Shahzad, export manager at fruit firm Matila Kino, says the company exports to some 60 countries.
More than 16 countries we export.
We are exporting in more than 60 countries, Russia, Canada, UK, and countries in Asia like Indonesia and the Philippines. We also export to Gulf countries like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and they like our kinos very much.
Growers say Sargata's district soil has the perfect properties, such as aeration, fertility, drainage, and salt concentrations. They say citrus thrives best in deep, loose, well-aerated soils, devoid of any hard pan layers of calcium carbonate in the rooting zones. After harvesting, Shahzad says the fruit is brought to the company's packing house, then loaded onto trucks and lorries. According to the Ministry for Commerce and Industry, in 2020-21, Pakistan exported a record 460,000 tons of oranges, marking the highest ever volume during any one season. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
Artek House's new exhibit in Washington, D.C. is called Transient Impermanent Painting and offers visitors an experience in hyperrealism. The Italian multimedia artist Quayola projects hyperrealistic pictorials of paint strokes against the sound of a coded computerized Yamaha piano. As each note follows and each color morphs into the next, the connection between Quayola's technologies creates a sensory fusion between sight and sound. Maxim Moskalkov had a look inside the exhibition.
The boundaries between sound and picture get blurred in this interactive space. Giant screens project digital paint strokes and excerpts of expressionists' works that go together with the music and blend right in. Davide Quayola is a British multimedia artist who creates digital art mixed with robotics and sound. He is behind Artek House's new exhibition in Washington, D.C. called Transient – Impermanent Painting. It is his first exhibition in the U.S. He specifically looks into how robots and machinery coexist with humans and how new technologies change the way we perceive the world.
All of my work really deals with the relationship between man and machine. I'm very interested in generating new experimental relationship and ways of interacting with machines to create art. But I think this, the last couple of years, this period of the pandemic, in generally created a huge shift, the radical change in everybody's relationship with technology. Suddenly, we all became much, much closer to technology as the only way we could actually communicate with one another for quite long stretches of time. And on the other hand, I think to celebrate, sort of return to experience things physically.
On the opening day, together with musician Seta, Quayola performed live in Washington, D.C. The concert is constantly being replayed at the exhibition. Software that was specifically designed for this project synchronizes the sound and creates a unique audiovisual system of reproducing sound and video.
Unique about this one, I think we truly see the innovation between music and technology and a sound and how we can visualize it.
Davide Quayola says his aim is not to create complete pieces, be it music or art, but rather to demonstrate the process of transformation within art. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Washington.
That's our program for today. You've been listening to VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.